present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a clipping from the Cambrian News, read by Peter Donaldson.
To the person who replied to box number L92 on the 19th of September, can you please reply again, as the letter was lost in the post?
Thanks to Tony Landeg of Aberystwyth. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome on my right, Andy Hamilton and Michael White. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. And the first question goes to Andy Hamilton. Who flew to Ireland for a bit of peace?
Well, is this President Clinton flying to Ireland? I suspect to try and take credit for what is called the peace process in Northern Ireland, but he's looking a pretty dispirited figure these days. During the press interview alongside Boris Yeltsin, you definitely saw him lose the will to live a couple of times. So.
It was touch and go which one was losing fast.
They had these Matryoshka dolls, didn't they, of Monica and Bill, and one fits inside the other.
He only went to Russia in the first place because he'd heard it was on its knees.
What I want to know is what Monica was getting out of that relationship, because was it the classic sort of boss has affair with his secretary job where she's going home, she's telling her friends, as soon as the kids grow up, as soon as Chelsea grows up and he stops being president, he's leaving the wife and he's coming to live with me? Perhaps she's still hoping that. Could I still be Mrs. Clinton one day?
No, I think she's blown it now.
Ken Tynan many years ago said, "The love that dare not speak its name because its mouth is full."
2 points to Andy. Michael, what is threatening to reduce the world economy to ruble?
I suppose it must be the state of the Russian economy, really. Tony Blair is quite adamant that the Russians should stick with the reforms. Stick to the spending limits inherited from the Tsar.
Luckily, though, I mean, they're blessed with strong leadership. As in the old days, of course, under Soviet rule, they used to embalm leaders and lay them out in public. Now they embalm them while they're still alive.
Come on, I thought he compared quite well with Ronald Reagan on a good day.
People only want money from Bill Clinton, really. I mean, he goes everywhere, and he turned up in Russia, and they thought, well, give us some money. Then he didn't give any money to them, and it was all miserable. Because this is like the Salvation Army, Bill Clinton. You just want the soup, but you have to listen to all this crap first.
Unfortunately, Mr. Yeltsin has put forward a brilliant plan to stave off Russia's mounting debt crisis. All he needs is to find someone who'll take back his empties. However, the Dow Jones Index made a spectacular 200-point recovery on Monday this week. It's known technically as a dead cat bounce, something last experienced by Humphrey the Downing Street Moggy when the Blairs moved into number 10. 2 points to Michael. Jeremy, in whose good books have the navvies been replaced by lovies?
The Labour Party. It used to be that in order to exert influence within the Labour Party, you had to have a string vest visible through your shirt. Is no longer the case, sadly, and now you've just got to be a celebrity. People think that there's a lot of nepotism going on because wealthy millionaires are getting jobs on quangos and ministerial posts and stuff, but I mean, Blair is bound to appoint people he knows, and he only knows millionaires. It's fair enough. But if you give him $5,000, you can be a sort of junior secretary of state at environment or something. Although that's $5,000 small polenta to Blair, isn't it, really? But, okay. Although he's mean, apparently. Did you see this? He's very mean. He was at a restaurant in Edinburgh. I don't know why, he was working on some new material or trying out a new accent or something. He was up in Scotland and he went in a restaurant and they didn't give a tip, with all that money coming in as well. But £26 million they spent on the general election, and we were going to vote for them anyway, isn't it? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like having advance notice of what the lottery numbers are, but buying 26 million lottery tickets just to be on the safe side.
It's not entirely his fault in the tipping business in Edinburgh. He was told by Gordon Brown not to tip more than the Tories.
Yes, this week Labour published a list of benefactors who paid them more than £5,000, including Eddie Izzard, Richard Wilson and Mick Hucknall, who, in line with current New Labour thinking, has changed the name of his band to Simply Rosé. 2 points for Jeremy. Alan, please listen to this. was the band of the RAF regiment with 633 Squadron, Alan, which typhoon failed to go down a storm?
Oh, I love this. In the dark days of the last lot, when we were facing Johnny Bosch, there was an aeroplane called the Typhoon. But since then, we've all linked up, and we're buddies, and we built this thing called the Eurofighter, which we wanted to call the Typhoon, and the Germans didn't like it, because they're not as nostalgic about the... about the great days. And as a result, the Eurofighter is going to be called the Eurofighter in Italy, Germany and Spain, countries I still think of as the Axis. And anywhere else where decent people are, it's going to be called the Typhoon. Very pleased about that. Hope we get a crack at them again. I'd have called it the Spitfire, and to hell with it.
If we really want to wind them up, we should call it the Achtung Spitfire.
British companies involved in building the plane denied they'd chosen a name designed to provoke the Germans, saying they'd put forward many alternatives, including Take That Fritz, For You Johnny Cabbage Eater The War Is Over, Get Your Towel Off My Deck Chair. So the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And we begin round two with an item spotted in The Guardian.
The Open University has issued this important warning to students considering the following music course next year. Beethoven. If you have severely impaired hearing, you may find that much of the course is unsuitable for you.
Thanks to the many listeners who sent that in. Andy, whose tour of duty ended undiplomatically when he decided it was time to get away.
Oh, is this poor diplomat in Ibiza? If you think of thankless jobs, you know, which are things like President Clinton's zipper maintenance man, but maybe the most thankless job you can think of is our man in Ibiza, who has to go and visit vomit-stained teenagers the morning after they've been out on drunken revelries, and basically he's just, I think he was saying that the English are just behaving so badly that he just couldn't face representing them anymore, and they're all fighting or throwing up for the benefit of documentary crews, and so he's chucked it in, and he's gone for a quieter posting in
Glasgow.
He's appalled by sex, drugs and sexual depravity. He's obviously not Foreign Office material, is he? I suspect he's from a trade background.
Yes, it was our vice consul in Ibiza, Michael Burkitt, who resigned in disgust, describing British holidaymakers as animals. Local police say it would be wrong to blame the Britons' drunken antics on overexposure to the sun. Many of them were Daily Star readers. Michael, and finally, for whom does the bell toll?
Oh, that, yes, bong.
Yes.
Yes. Bong, we're cancelling Trevor MacDonald. Bong, we want to make more money. Bong. By having movies at 10 o'clock, which nobody will watch, bong, because Channel 5 has already bong tried that racket. And it doesn't work, bong, because you can get them all cheaper on video or on the satellite bong. Tony Blair, on the other hand, is fighting. At least he says he's fighting. At least his spokesman says he's fighting to save News at 10 for the nation. Save Michael Brunson for the British people.
Why is Blair always telling ITV what to do? He told them to release Deirdre. I mean, it'll be horrible for them because I think they will be haunted by the angry ghost of Reginald Bosanquet, who will slur at them in the middle of the night, and they'll wake up in a cold sweat.
Reggie Bosanquet used to drink a whole bottle of wine during News at 10, didn't he? Kept it under the table, and when they had a film report from the Sudan or somewhere, he just pulled it out.
That was only when he was on the wagon.
Reggie Bosanquet was wonderful because he never left you in any doubt what he thought about a story. Because I remember one night tuning in, he said, "The National Union of Miners are pressing for a pay claim of over 3%. And then he just waggled his wig for emphasis, you know.
Yes, many News at 10 staff were in tears after being informed of the plans in the staff canteen, and there was more after the break. ITV says it's wrong to blame them for the shift, as they've been constantly asking countries around the world to make their famines, earthquakes and natural disasters more entertaining. Jeremy, listen to this.
Don't stop the carnival. No, don't stop the carnival. You'll never find the best way. No, don't stop the carnival. You dance and sing the night and pay your way. No, don't stop the carnival.
Jeremy, here's a teaser. Who placed himself first among equals at the Notting Hill Carnival?
Well, last year it was William Hague.
Oh, Geoffrey Archer.
First among equals.
Right. Oh, I see, yeah. Geoffrey Archer that writes airport books. Under the pseudonym Barbara Taylor Bradford.
Yes,
that's so. Who went to the carnival, did he?
Yes.
Did he? Did he have a good time?
That's wonderful.
You ought to have seen him blacked up. It was a wonderful sight.
You know Geoffrey Archer, Mike, don't you?
I've not studied the small clauses of Mr. Blair's legislation this week before I'm prepared to answer that. Fine man, fine man, fine lawyers.
Lord Archer went to the Notting Hill Carnival in what was part of his campaign to become Lord Mayor of London. He's already known for his very generous policies towards the capital's public transport system, such as leaving carrier bags full of money at mainline terminals. Former Tory party chairman was photographed dancing a jig surrounded by a number of attractive and very scantily dressed women. The pictures could well lead to reputations being seriously damaged, but so far the women have not instituted proceedings. Alan, why yet again was Britain having to fight them on the beaches?
It's not about, hey, where the mink is?
Yes.
Oh, right. Well, there's this last outpost of empire. It's a group of stones that disappears when the tide comes in. And some frog stood on it with a Patagonian flag. A man called Jean Patois and said, I'm taking this back because of the Falklands. And a British bobby pulled him off.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, God, it's another truncheon joke. Yes, well, that's what happened, and that was the Third World War.
The only thing on this base is a lavatory, apparently. Just a little lavatory.
Yeah. You said a lavatory for passing fishermen. I thought that was extraordinary.
You can't pass fishermen, that's a thing. Just brought the tears to my eyes.
You can't pass a fisherman, but you can swallow a fisherman's phrase. I thank you.
It's the French novelist Jean Raspail, whose invasion of the British Channel Island inlet Les Manquiers, or the Minkies, ended peacefully after just 2 days. Raspail claimed his invasion on Monday continued a proud French tradition stretching back to Napoleonic times, while his capitulation to a sole British policeman on Wednesday continued another French tradition stretching back to 1941. Police sent to recapture the tiny windswept Channel Island found a sole deserted farm, had a toilet, a tattered Patagonian flag, and half a dozen offshore trusts belonging to Geoffrey Robinson. And the scores at the end of round two are, impressively but slightly drearily, everybody 8 points. We start round three with a cutting from St. Luke's Parish magazine, Holmes Chapel.
The ladies of the church have cast off clothing of every kind, and they may be seen in the church hall on Friday afternoon.
Thanks, Mrs. S. Beacon, for that. Andy, who reckons Glenn Hoddle talks twaddle?
Yeah, England are preparing for a very important match against Sweden, but training is being disrupted because they're all promoting books. Glenn Hoddle wrote his account of how he had to drag Gazza off the curtains, and Tony Adams has published his autobiography, which I understand is meant to be very good and is mostly about his drink addiction. He has criticised Glenn, but Glenn, I don't know if you saw the interview, Glenn was perfectly happy at this moment in time. Football is all about opinions, and they sat there and Tony Adams said that their relationship had improved. Now that you'd slag Glenn off. So it'll be very interesting to see in the game against Sweden on Saturday if Tony Adams is substituted after 15 seconds, then I think we might be able to say that they were putting a bit of a gloss on things. But
Arsenal defender Tony Adams has brought out a book criticising the England coach Glenn Hoddle for his handling of the team in France. Adams also talks frankly about his own rampant alcoholism in the early 1990s. At one point he was so drunk he was asked to behave by Paul Gascoigne. Throughout the early 1990s, a number of Arsenal players spent all their free time drinking, taking drugs and going wild, saving all their boring activities for Saturday afternoons at Highbury. Jeremy, whose family portrait turned out to be fake?
I don't know, really. Do any of us really know the answer to that question, Simon? And what do we mean by answer, really? I mean, I could give you a form of words that would satisfy you, maybe win us some points, but would it really answer all the ramifications of the question? I'm sorry, it's the school holidays. I've been at Discovery Zone all week and I haven't read any papers.
That's for clue.
Can I have a clue? What's the answer?
It's Gatwell, who were set up to do a sort of father and daughter programme on Channel 4, and they turned out not to be father and daughter at all, but Andy will explain.
It's called Daddy's Girls, I think, and it was supposed to be about the worryingly intense relationship between a teenage girl and her father. However, the problem was that the teenage girl's father didn't want to be in the documentary, so she got a boyfriend to pretend to be her dad.
So they were right to be worried.
Yeah. And the sophisticated program makers failed to notice that her dad was only 10 years older than she was.
Channel 4's documentary Daddy's Girl was pulled before transmission after 19-year-old Victoria Greetham admitted the man in the programme was not her father but her boyfriend. In recent months, several programmes have been exposed as fakes, including a Carlton documentary on drugs, a Channel 4 series on homelessness, and anything containing a sworn statement by Bill Clinton. Alan, who cleaned up after an unauthorised withdrawal?
I think it's called Dawes or Doys. It's a bank manager, a woman bank manager of 21. And she had an assistant bank manager that she didn't take a shine to. So she gave him a mop, and he had to mop the floor, poor sod. And he took her to whatever you take 21-year-old women to. Some raving... some raving tribunal. And he got a lot of money, which I'm very glad to say.
I liked her. She looked very straight. I'd have mopped her floor. She looked very stern. Said that she might punish one in a rather stern way.
Trainee bank clerk Andrew Gilbert won his case for sex discrimination against Britain's youngest female bank manager, 21-year-old Catherine Dowes. Mr Gilbert said not only had he been dismissed by Miss Dowes in a terse letter, but she'd charged him £15 for it. Midland said it regretted the incident and has since appointed a middle-aged male bank manager whose job it is to patronise and demean the female staff at the bank. So the scores at the end of round three are dramatically different. Alan and Jeremy have 11, with Andy and Michael are in the lead with 14 points. Before we start the final round, here's a Lonely Hearts ad seen in the Didsbury Reporter.
Mature, young-looking, 409-year-old lady is looking for that special male. I am full of life and attractive, own home and car. You should be full of life and preferably younger than me.
Thanks to Jack Jezek for that. Andy, listen to this.
Pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and bother your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, I love you, yes, I do, you and your pussycat knows.
Andy, who likes you, really? No, he does.
Apparently, there's been research that cats can tell if you like them.
Peter Mandelson can't, clearly.
I don't know, Michael, what are the indicators that tell a cat if you like it?
Well, you come into the room and you sort of look at them and smile at them, or you look at them and, you know, give some sort of sign that you want to put them in the microwave, and they can tell. Basically, that's what it comes to. Cats are smart. They have IQs of 9 or 10 in some cases. Whereas everybody knows dogs are worse than children. That's it.
Yeagle.
The second GATT story this week, into what loathing of GATTs, see the in Telegraph, the Vicenza cookbook. And it's recipes for cats, not for feeding them. It's not for pilchards. It's actually for cooking cats. You have things like gatto in vino. And it's terrible. You poke through the carrots and there's something with whiskers looking at you.
They can't understand much about humans, really, because to please you, they bring in a half-dead vole and present it to you, and that's to show that they like you. But surely they realise... I mean, they must have noticed that we eat things like sandwiches and pizza and stuff. We seldom tuck into a vole or half a pigeon. They come and give it you and look like, look, it's your dinner, look. And for late, you get a pound off. It's bizarre.
They really like you. Of course, they spray your briefcase.
According to a survey by scientists at Southampton University, Tiddles digging her claws into your flesh is her way of saying she really likes you. Her opinion doesn't change even after you've screamed and thrown her across the room. The editor of Your Cat magazine says that cats are unpredictable and have their own personality. This humanisation of dumb animals carries on into the language we use, with phrases like cat that got the cream, cat in hell's chance, and grinning like Tony Blair. According to another survey, 99% of all people hate cats. And everything else written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. Michael, who's starting his own one-man underground movement?
Is it this man who's burying himself alive in a pub?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It is.
Yes, a man who's burying himself alive in a pub car park.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the one. He's burying himself alive in a pub car park. The fool.
He wants to break a record for his mother.
Yes.
Apparently his mother was buried. The entire family's been buried alive down the long arches of the years. They're self-buriers.
Yeah.
Go down to the jobs. If you've got anything for a self-burier, that's what they do.
Jeff Smith is being buried alive in a makeshift coffin 6 feet beneath the beer garden of his local pub in an attempt to beat a world record, which in turn beat the record set by his late mother. Jeff hopes to smash the previous record for time spent completely in the dark, the one currently held by Hillary Clinton. Jeremy, whose new platform shoes look set to win the fashion race by a very long neck?
This is the giraffe, isn't it? There's a giraffe somewhere, and it's now wearing platform shoes, so it just looks like Janet Street Porter.
It's Woburn Safari Park.
Is it?
And they called it Dumbo. They know sod all at Woburn Safari. How can you call a giraffe Dumbo?
You must have called it Pocahontas or something. His front legs are too
front
short.
Legs too short.
It's supposed to be the other way around.
I think what they got is a kangaroo and they don't know it. They don't know. They know nothing.
Did they take the giraffe up Clark's and get that little and say, so you sit down there, we'll get that little that little measuring thing. And say, what would you like? We've got these brogues here.
I think the flares were a bit excessive, though, and the boots, I think they were mocking it at that.
Farrier David Simmons was called in this week. Or is it Simons? Do you think it's Simons or Simmons?
You say potato.
You say Farrier.
No, yeah. Farrier, not Farrier.
Farrier.
Giraffe.
Coat.
I'll be getting the shoes. We'll get to your coat as well.
Farrier David Simons was this week called on to make a set of 3-inch platform shoes for Count Jumbo, the Woburn Abbey giraffe, who was born with his front legs shorter than the back legs. A local vet said the animal had been in severe lower lumbar pain, though things did improve after they removed the thermometer. Mr. Simons initially said he'd be making the platform shoes from a concoction of aluminium, plastic, glass fibre and silicon, but he quickly realised that was a recipe for Pamela Anderson. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
This is from Kate Brown, sent by fax. It's from The Scotsman, from an interview with the Australian author, so I will attempt an accent, of The Secret of Happy Children. The father of two is, however, very ready to admit that pontificating on parenting should not be undertaken lightly. When I wrote the first version of The Secret of Happy Children, we didn't actually have children. He reveals, what we did have were wombats in the house. which we brought up, and it was based on those experiences. Of course, when we had children, I went back and completely rewrote all the sections on practical advice.
Mine is from the Lonely Hearts column of the Great Outdoors magazine, kindly provided by M.K. Lawrence of Congleton, Cheshire. And it's in between, you know, quiet Cambridgeshire male seeks, blah, blah. Man 40, dog 3, need woman to throw sticks. Northwest based, but dog adventurous.
Jeremy.
This is sent in by Peter Matthews of Fareham in Hampshire, and it's from the Hampshire Chronicle, and it describes Chilbolton Village Hall, and it says, the unusual garden privy straddling the river, surmounted by a Victorian finial crown. Through the seat of the privy can be viewed the prized brown trout of the River Tees.
Simon, I spotted this letter about a month ago in that great magazine, The New Scientist, and it's a letter to the editor. It says, dear sir, I can confirm your item concerning the antidepressant drug clomipramine, which made some people have an orgasm when they sneezed. A friend of mine had a similar reaction to the drug. When I asked her what she was taking for it, she answered, pepper.
And the scores at the end of the contest are Alan and Jeremy 16 points, but Andy and Michael, this week's winners, with 17 points. Before we leave you, here's an item from the BBC Music magazine sent by Earl Easy of Axminster.
Classical music can make you more quick-witted. Laboratory mice took 10 minutes to work their way through a miniature maze, then were divided into two groups. One was exposed to classical music for 10 hours a day, and the other to heavy metal. The former then made it through the maze in 90 seconds, while the hard rock mice took half an hour. The project was curtailed after the hard rock mice killed each other.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Michael White. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was John Rolfe.